In Tokyo, the newspaper headlines read, United States Pacific Fleet wiped out. This was one of the few true reports to emanate from Tokyo. The proud battleships were sunk or smashed out of action. 2,343 officers and men were killed. 1,272 injured, nearly 1,000 men missing. Many of them are still entombed today inside the battleship Oklahoma. Throughout the day, the reports came in, but none told of the devastation that actually took place. On the evening of December 7th, there was another ironic broadcast. Eleanor Roosevelt, the wife of the president, would make her regular weekly Sunday night report. She would have to change the script that she had prepared earlier in the week.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm speaking to you tonight at a very serious moment in our history. The cabinet is convening and the leaders in Congress are meeting with the president. The State Department and Army and Navy officials have been with the president all afternoon. In fact, the Japanese ambassador was talking to the president at the very time that Japan's airships were bombing our citizens in Hawaii and the Philippines and sinking one of our transports loaded with lumber on its way to Hawaii. By tomorrow morning, the members of Congress will have a full report and be ready for action. In the meantime, we, the people, are already prepared for action. Many of you all over this country have boys in the services who will now be called upon to go into action. You have friends and families in what has suddenly become a danger zone. You cannot escape anxiety. You cannot escape a clutch of fear at your heart. And yet I hope that the certainty of what we have to meet will make you rise above these fears. We are the free and unconquerable people of the United States of America.
Now more irony. Her guest this Sunday, December 7th, was Corporal James Cannon, a soldier based at Fort Dix, New Jersey. Today, newspaper readers throughout the country know the corporal as Jimmy Cannon, one of America's great sports writers. His columns today reflect his thoughts of more than two decades ago, the greatness of the United States fighting man.
How long have you been in the Army, Corporal Cannon?
I've been in 6 months, Mrs. Roosevelt.
You were a selectee?
Yes, Mrs. Roosevelt.
Well, after 6 months of Army life, how do you like it?
I want to tell you, with great sincerity, I am proud to be a bad soldier in this great army of the people.
I don't believe you're such a bad soldier, not with those stripes on your arm, Corporal Cannon.
Honestly, Mrs. Roosevelt, I'm not so hot. But there are good soldiers in my outfit.
Surely there are things which you don't like about the Army.
I don't like hikes. My feet tear and blister. I can't like getting up in the dark of the morning. I'm a clumsy chambermaid. My bed always looks like a haystack. But these discomforts are small. I've had a lot of laughs in the 32 years of my life. I'm willing to kick back 1 or 2 years so that I can live the rest of my life with dignity.
What would you suggest to the average civilian as the best way in which they can be helpful to the men in the service?
You'll have to excuse me if I give a pretty strong answer to that question. First, the civilians can cut out those stale jokes and stop that mocking salute too many of them hand a man in uniform. Let them give a soldier the dignity he is entitled to. Tell them to treat a soldier as you would a civilian. Tell them to cut out calling a soldier Sarge. The same guys call a Pullman porter George. We're a civilian army. We're the army of the people, and we want to be treated that way.
As the nation awaited the president's message of war, Prime Minister Winston Churchill spoke to the empire.
This is London. Listeners are now to hear the Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Winston Churchill. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Churchill.
You will remember that a month ago, with the full approval of the nation and of the empire, I pledged the word of Great Britain that should the United States become involved in a war with Japan, a British declaration would follow within the hour. I therefore spoke to President Roosevelt on the Atlantic telephone last night, with a view to arranging the timing of our respective declarations. The President told me that he would this morning send a message to Congress, and I assured him that we would follow immediately. When we think of the insane ambition and insatiable appetites which have caused this vast, melancholy extension of the war, we can only feel that Hitler's madness has infected the Japanese mind, and that the root of the evil and its branch must be extirpated together. And as I told the House of Commons this afternoon, in the past, we had a light which flickered. In the present, we have a light which flames. And in the future, there will be a light which will shine calm and resplendent over all the land and all the sea.
Back in the United States, there was nervousness and fear amongst the populace. The drone of the airplane engine sent eyes looking skyward, and men, women, and children remembered well the slaughter at Rotterdam, London, Coventry, and just yesterday at Pearl. New York's Mayor Fiorello H. LaGuardia, head of National Civilian Defense, spoke to the people.
Now, in the event of an air raid, and let me warn you all again that distance is no protection, that we who live on the Atlantic coast are just as much in danger of being bombed as our countrymen who were bombed last night in Honolulu. So here are some of the fundamental rules to remember. Don't listen to rumors. Don't follow any excited person who may be screaming. He may be trying to create a panic. Keep off the streets during a raid. If you're more than 5 minutes from home when an air raid comes, lie down under shelter. Otherwise, go home and stay there. Put out the lights if the planes come over. The lights that are out will never guide a Jap or any other bomber. Cooperate with your air raid wardens. He is your friend. He will help you. Don't be a wise guy and get hurt. We can lick the Japs if everybody does his part, but we are not afraid, and we are confident that we are going to beat the Japs so badly that they will never attempt such a dastardly act as they committed yesterday for the next 300 years.
It is Monday, December 8th, 1941. The place, Washington, D.C. The situation, President Roosevelt is about to speak to a joint session of Congress. He enters the Great Hall on the arm of his son James, a captain in the Marine Corps. There is wild cheering, rebel yells, enthusiastic applause from both sides of the chamber. The president is in formal morning attire. In the more than two decades since the speech, it has rarely been heard in its entirety. Yet it took the president less than 6 minutes to ask Congress to declare war against the Empire of Japan. Here, then, is the entire speech.
Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after, Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. The Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. Defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
Within 1 hour, the Senate unanimously voted war against Japan. In the House, there was one dissenting vote, Congresswoman Jeanette Rankin of Montana. She was consistent. In 1917, she voted against war with Germany. So the United States and Great Britain were now joined in the fight. 3 years, 8 months, and 25 days later, the war ended, and another ceremony would take place. This time aboard the battleship Missouri in Tokyo Bay. It is September 2nd, 1945. President Roosevelt is dead. He is one of almost 300,000 American battle deaths. Aboard the Missouri, there is a dramatic remembrance of the past when the president was alive. From the foremast of the Missouri flies an American flag. It is the same flag that flew atop the Capitol in Washington on December 7th, 1941. General Douglas MacArthur, Supreme Commander Pacific Theater, opens the ceremonies.
We are gathered here, representatives of the major warring powers, to conclude a solemn agreement whereby peace may be restored. The issues involving divergent ideals and ideologies have been determined on the battlefields of the world, and hence are not for our discussion or debate. It is my earnest hope, and indeed the hope of all mankind, that from this solemn occasion, a better world shall emerge out of the blood and carnage of the past. I now invite the representatives of the Emperor of Japan and the Japanese government and the Japanese Imperial General Headquarters to sign the instrument of surrender at the places indicated. Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always.
December 7th, 1941, the day of the attack on Pearl. If there is an epitaph for those who died and a prologue for those not yet born, it was spoken on July 16th, 1945, when the first atom bomb was exploded on a New Mexico desert. Describing the scene, one observer said, "The blast was followed almost immediately by the strong, sustained, almost awesome roar which warned of doomsday and made us feel perhaps we puny things were blasphemous to dare tamper with the forces heretofore reserved for the Almighty God."
These proceedings are closed.